On August 8, 2019, at the Bozeman Public Library, Brian Fady, the Clean Energy Program Director of the Montana Environmental Information Center, gave an informational talk titled, What's the Deal with Northwestern Energy? He was introduced by David Merrill of the National Sierra Club. It was followed by a lively question and answer exchange, which featured, among others, Representative Tom Woods, Democrat of Bozeman, who is currently running for the Public Service Commission's Region 3, the seat currently held by Roger Koopman, who is term limited and cannot run again. Heather Bellamy, who works for Northwestern Energy, took issue with some of the statements Brian Fady made.
My name is David Merrill. I'm the senior organizer with the Sierra Club. I'm very pleased that you have come out to talk about a very important topic, Northwestern Energy, and how they decide the kind of electricity you get. It's a big question. One of the things you hear in the climate movement, as far as addressing the climate crisis, is decarbonize the grid and electrify everything. And that means everything from a light bulb up to commercial aircraft, everything in between, which means that the electricity provider in Montana is a huge piece of how we address the climate crisis. And so it's very important that the public understands how they operate, how they decide on the type of electricity you get, and all the other gradations of how that works. And we are very fortunate tonight because we have the Clean Energy Program Director for the Montana Environmental Information Center, Brian Fady, and he is going to take you through that.
So I'm Brian Fady. I'm the Clean Energy Program Director at the Montana Environmental Information Center, MEIC. We are a nonprofit environmental advocacy organization based in Helena. We were founded in 1973, and so we've been around quite a while. And most of my duties involve lobbying at the state legislature and working with the regulatory agencies that oversee utilities in Montana. Starting from sort of a 101 level about utilities and specifically Northwestern Energy, and for just understanding in general how decisions get made, why decisions get made about what power plants get built or what power plants don't get built. I start with, why do we have to be here? And I think it's because Northwestern Energy is not like some other utilities around the country that are making progress and that are setting the goals that need to be set to address the climate crisis. The biggest utility in Iowa has committed to producing all of its energy from renewable sources. Mid-American Energy, that's a for-profit utility just like Northwestern. Xcel Energy in the middle there out of Colorado, serving millions of customers there, committing to go carbon-free by 2050. Also a for-profit utility. Indiana Utility planning to be coal-free by 2028. That's in Indiana, a place where most folks wouldn't necessarily see as a hotbed for action on climate change or action on clean energy. And it's not always climate change that's necessarily driving all of these decisions. It's an example of how there are plenty of utilities around the country that are doing much more and doing it much faster than Northwestern Energy is. And I think that's why we have to be here today, and it's why our work is so important, is that we need to push for this. We know we need to push for this in order to address the climate crisis. I am a bit of a hopeful person. We're here because Northwestern is not like these other utilities, but it can be. It absolutely can be. And in a very fundamental way, utilities can actually be the hero in the climate crisis. That door is open. If utilities decide to move away from carbon sources and move on to clean energy sources, that is what we need. And if they were voluntarily doing it, that would be fantastic. And we would love to applaud them for doing that. And hopefully once they start doing that, we can do that. So the door is open for utilities to be the hero. Unfortunately, Northwestern has not been that so far. What has Northwestern been doing? They have been fighting pro-renewable energy policies for years and years. They've been fighting the rooftop solar policy. They've been fighting the Montana Renewable Energy Standard since it was passed in 2005. They've been fighting it ever since. There's a federal law, what the heck PURPA is. Needless to say, it's a federal law that promotes renewable energy, and the company's been fighting that tooth and nail as well. The company's been fighting to make customers pay exorbitant prices to get coal energy. I'm starting to kind of call this the coal strip bad deal, but you could call it a lot of things. Basically, you're a Northwestern customer. You're paying too much for energy because of particularly Colstrip, but coal energy in general. the company going forward only wants to build new fossil fuels. They put out a 20-year plan. Their most recent complete version of this plan showed the company acquiring no new renewables, only new fossil fuel gas plants. And they put out an updated plan earlier this year, was a draft of it, and it's showing the same signs that the company is not interested at all in doing new renewable energy and only wants to do expensive new fossil fuel plants. And so we are here because Northwestern has just been bad for the climate, and they've been bad for ratepayers. And these things go hand in hand these days. Turns out we can actually solve the climate crisis by actually helping ratepayers. And the company shows no signs of stopping. I observe this company pretty closely. I've done it for years now. They are only accelerating their entrenchment into fossil fuels, and they have continued to fight tooth and nail against any new renewable energy coming onto their system. If there is one thing that you take away from tonight, it's that this is a for-profit company that we're dealing with. People sometimes think of their utility, and the image that comes to mind is sort of engineers that are running the grid. They're sort of pulling levers and turning knobs, and they're making sure the grid is running, and they're just doing that job. At the end of the day, this is a for-profit company. And with that comes all the motivations of any for-profit company. It has a stock price. It has shareholders. The executives have to report to the shareholders every quarter about how they are increasing their revenue and increasing the stock price. Corporate headquarters are in South Dakota. There's the big building in Butte, but that is just their Montana headquarters. It is not the corporate headquarters, which are actually out of state in South Dakota. And I pulled this little image here from the company's website. This is their investor relations page. They got a whole page with information for folks who are investing in the company. You can go and see all their quarterly announcements to shareholders. They keep an up-to-date stock quote for the company, which, by the way, the company is at an all-time high stock price right now. They crossed into all-time high territory around February of this year, and they've remained there ever since. A little bit more, they got a board of directors. Only 2 of 8 of these are Montanans, and one of those is the CEO, Bob Rowe, which I think is a bit of a cheat one. So really, it should be 1 of 7 of the board are Montanans. The rest are out-of-state folks. They're a state-protected monopoly. And that's the other sort of interesting setup here that's different from any other business that we usually deal with or think about out in the world. So the state of Montana, and in general sort of government in general, has guaranteed Northwestern a monopoly. So you can't purchase your electricity from anyone else. You have one choice. And there's some practicality in this. If you had multiple companies that were building transmission lines to serve each of their customers and all the wires were crisscrossing around, that would be a big mess. It would probably be a big overbuild. And so initially, when sort of utilities were getting started in the United States, this idea of sort of granting a monopoly to one company, they'll just have the one wires and poles running to serve customers, there was some thought process behind this. But it is a state-protected monopoly. And the trade-off there, what the company gives in return for its monopoly-protected status, is it has a lot more regulation than a typical business. There is a whole state agency called the Public Service Commission, which is made up of elected officials who get to control a lot of the outcomes for the company, including how much money they make. So at a very fundamental level, this company, and utilities in general, if they are an investor-owned utility, which is the other term for for-profit utility, they are trading off this monopoly status for additional regulation. So the company must follow the law. So what does it do like any for-profit company? It hires a team of lobbyists and lawyers to try to shape those laws for the benefit of the company. It does this at the state legislature. I can tell you, I've been in the halls the last couple of sessions. They have a team of folks who go around, talk to legislators, try to influence them to get the laws, get the rules of the game set up so that they benefit the company, not the ratepayer, not the customer, not us as everyday customers. The company at the end of the day is looking to shape those laws to help their corporate profit. And they do it at the Public Service Commission as well. That's the entity that most directly oversees them. Again, these lobbyists and lawyers are constantly working on ways to shape the rules of the game at the commission so that they benefit the company and not necessarily the everyday ratepayer. I'm not getting partisan here. I'm pointing to a former commissioner of the Montana Public Service Commissioner, Travis Cavola, very well-respected figure. He was on the commission for 8 years. This guy is a national thought leader in utility regulation. He's a Republican. And he made this observation on Twitter one time. How's the company get such favorable treatment in the legislature and at the Public Service Commission? One of the things is, a lot of times, Republican legislators, they'll say, well, I am pro-business, and this monopoly utility is a business, so where do I sign up? What can I do to help? And that's sort of a starting point that we have to overcome with a lot of legislators, or even commissioners, quite frankly. Jump into the utility decision-making. How do they make decisions? What is their thought process? It's actually rather simple. What do utility executives consider when making a decision? Profit, profit, profit. Keeping the lights on as well, but to facilitate that profit. They are a for-profit company. That is the lens by which the executives make decisions. That is what a for-profit company does. The business model of a utility, it's a different business model than what we're used to dealing with a standard company out there in the world. They have basically a cost-plus model where they get to add up all of the costs that it takes to run the grid and then tack on what's vaguely referred to as a reasonable profit margin. And it generally falls somewhere 9 to 12% of a profit margin on top of all of their costs. That's the basic, simple model of it. Now, certainly there are details to all this, precisely how you get to how much costs is it to run the grid. There's a whole process of determining what was a reasonable cost, what was an unreasonable cost, should it be included in that amount that eventually gets multiplied by the profit margin. For a basic understanding and a solid understanding of how utilities work, it's a cost-plus model. They get all their costs and they multiply it by a profit margin. So what does that mean for their decision-making? What sort of decisions would they want to make? Well, whatever is more expensive, whatever costs more, that is what the company is interested in doing, because that is how they make more profit. And that may sound perverse of an incentive for a company, but that's the way it works. Not just Northwestern. Again, this is all investor-owned utilities. It's the model by which they operate under. They are always looking to increase their costs because that's how they make more profit. This creates a problem, particularly for Northwestern executives, because right now, the cost of renewable energy and certainly energy efficiency is cheaper than fossil fuels. This is a table of sort of national median prices of different energy sources. This is not specifically Montana, but this was a 2018 report by the financial analyst firm Lazard. They put one of these out every year. It's a pretty respected report about what the costs are of different fuel sources for electricity. And at the top, we got rooftop solar, which is not as cost effective as the larger scale stuff. A little bit of economies of scale there. If you're doing a large utility scale solar project, you get better costs than if you're doing just a couple panels on a roof. But as you go down, you got solar rooftop for commercial, more cost effective, solar large scale. This says $36 to $44 per megawatt hour. That's the metric. But you can just think of it as $36 to $44 for a unit of energy. Onshore wind, $29 up to $56. Again, national average, $29 up to $56. Here's the fossil fuel sources. Gas peaking plant, quite expensive, $152 to $206. Nuclear, $112, starts that, goes up from there. Coal, $60, starts that, goes up from there. Even the biggest competition for renewables going forward in terms of new power plants, a gas combined cycle plant, which is the least costly of the gas options, $41 at the lowest. So the lowest fossil fuels can go is $41, wind $29, utility scale solar $36. You've already got solar and wind beating out the most cost effective version of gas plants. That's nationally. We actually have better numbers here in Montana for wind. These are the cost of energy for Northwestern customers specifically from their different power plants. And they have more power plants than this, but I just pulled these out for examples. You've got the Colstrip plant, costing Northwestern customers $74 a megawatt hour. It is their most expensive power plant. Go to the left, the blue line, the hydroelectric dams, $58. Then we get into wind, the Judith Gap Wind Farm. It's been around since 2005, $31. The latest wind project for Northwestern, it has a signed contract, it's getting built right now. The South Peak Wind Project, east of Great Falls, $22. $22. Compare that to the far right Colstrip 74. They just went on cost. it is a cheaper source of electricity to get wind energy in Montana. So that creates a problem if you're an executive who's looking to have higher costs so that you make more revenue. And this data all comes from the Montana Consumer Council. They're a government agency that produces excellent reports. This didn't come from us. This came from Northwestern's own filings. So how has the company been bad for climate and ratepayers? Let's jump a little bit more specifically. We've got a couple of examples. There are plenty, but here are some of the highlights. Attacking rooftop solar. The company has been attacking rooftop solar customers for years. They see it as competition. Here you have the ability for an everyday person or business to produce their own electricity and consume it for themselves. And they don't need the utility as much. They don't need to buy the utility's product as much. That means less spending for the utility and less profit for the utility. So they see it as competition, rooftop solar. And they've consistently attacked it at the legislature, trying to put new fees on rooftop solar customers, trying to decrease the credit that these customers get, that rooftop solar folks get when they put excess energy onto the grid. If you're a rooftop solar person, sometimes you're putting additional energy onto the grid. Northwestern is always trying to reduce the amount that you get when you put excess energy onto the grid. And particularly happening right now, there is a big case at the Public Service Commission where the company is really going aggressive, trying to put new fees on new rooftop solar customers. They're trying to separate out rooftop solar customers from everybody else and then put a bunch of new fees on just the rooftop solar folks. It is a pretty brazen attack on the rooftop solar industry that I think, if adopted whole cloth by the commission, would easily put out most, if not all, of Montana's rooftop solar installers. It would just be so uneconomic to do rooftop solar. It would be more costly to be a rooftop solar customer than to be a regular customer under what Northwestern is proposing there. And I'm happy to go into the details specifically, but they have just been attacking rooftop solar for years. They've been putting expensive coal energy onto customers also for years. We'll do the Colstrip bad deal part one. Here's the story of Colstrip and Northwestern. Here's what's going on here. In 2007, the company purchased its share of Colstrip that it currently owns. 150 megawatts, they bought it for $187 million. And this was shareholders buying it at the time. It wasn't yet in customers' rates. 1 year later, 2008, they turned around and got it put into customers' rates at a value of $407 million. In 1 year, they went from paying $187 to putting it in rates as if it was worth $407. How did they do this? They put out a request for bids from other companies saying, well, if we were to sell this share of Colstrip to some other company, how much might some other company pay? And they got one bid up at this $407 million amount. The company turned around to the Public Service Commission and said, look, we got a bid for $407 million. So it's worth $407 million. You should put it into rates as if it cost us $407 million to buy it. Unfortunately, the commission did that. Now, Northwestern never paid anyone $407 million. Money never exchanged hands. They only ever paid $187 million. But they got to put into rates as if it was worth $400 million. They made and continue to make hundreds of millions of dollars through this pure paper exercise back in 2008. And regardless of what anyone thinks about climate change, emissions, coal, this is just a bad deal for customers. We are all paying way too much for electricity because of this bad deal. And this is why Northwestern wants to keep Colstrip running. People have been asking me that for a while. I didn't always have a good answer until recently. MEIC hired some experts to look into this exact deal, what happened back in 2007, 2008. We figured it out. This is why. And it makes sense, of course. It's a profit-making machine for the company. And that is why they are fighting so hard to not only keep it running, but to put more of it into our rates, which brings us to the Colstrip bad deal part two. And this one is much more recent. This was in the legislative session just earlier this year up in Helena. Northwestern pushed these truly extreme bills, trying to get an additional 150 megawatts of Colstrip put into customers' rates. They wanted customers to have to pay for this. And it was Senate Bill 278 and then Senate Bill 331. You might have heard a bit about this. It was one of the biggest issues across the whole legislative session. There were tons of letters to the editor and editorials and op-eds and people showing up at hearings and all this stuff. It was a big deal throughout the legislative session because it was so extreme. They were trying to bypass the Public Service Commission and put this plant into customers' rates. And that is an extreme proposal for any utility to do. Doesn't matter Northwestern or anywhere around the country. We started asking people around the country, have you ever seen a bill like this to bypass the commission and just put it straight into rates? No one has. This was very unusual. It would have put customers on the hook for untold millions in costs, not only because the plant is an expensive source of energy, but the cleanup costs in particular for that facility. That facility is leaking pollution into the groundwater, millions of gallons, I don't know what the exact number is, millions of gallons a year into the groundwater. It has been for decades. There is all of the ash ponds that surround the plant. When you burn coal, you end up with this byproduct, coal ash, and you have to put it somewhere. And every coal plant has to deal with this. And they usually just sort of dig a pit nearby the plant and start tossing it in there. Sometimes they've lined the pit with some sort of protective lining, which inevitably ends up leaking. Although some plants didn't even do that back in the day. Colstrip has these ash ponds, and they will eventually have to be cleaned up. And the Montana Department of Environmental Quality has estimated it'll be at least $400 to $700 million for those cleanup costs. And we think that that's an underestimate, because DEQ almost always underestimates what the actual costs end up being. It could easily run in the billion-dollar range for the cleanup costs. And if these bills had passed, as Northwestern was trying to get, and they tried very hard to get these bills passed, it would have put us customers on the hook for this expensive, dirty coal energy for decades and all those cleanup costs. And it would not have even done what their prime talking point was to save Colstrip. That was sort of the emotional appeal behind it that the company and others used. Northwestern is only one of six owners of Colstrip. And those other owners, at least the five that are investor-owned utilities, they are trying to get out. They have legal mandates in their states. Of the other owners, two are in Washington State, two are in Oregon. You have one that is a little bit into Idaho. One of them is a merchant utility. But the ones that are in Washington State and Oregon, which make up the vast majority of the ownership of the plant, they are under legal requirements now to get out of that plant. The Washington folks have to be out by 2025, and the Oregon folks by 2030. So they want out. They're trying to get out. If this bill had passed, it would not have saved Colstrip. It only would have lined executives' pockets. The company took a big hit to its reputation because of its efforts on these bills, because of all the publicity being called out directly by folks across the political spectrum, from the left to the right. We were talking with folks who, in the past, we have been bitter enemies with on different pollution issues. But we came together during this legislative session because everybody saw what a bad deal this was for consumers. And so the company took a big hit to its reputation. I think they know they're in trouble with this. I think they know that people got the word and that their reputation has been tarnished pretty bad by this extreme effort. And I don't know if you've seen the massive TV and social media advertising campaign that they're doing now. It's all over, at least up in Helena. Every night we got ads running on TV where you have smiling executive Bob Rowe, or you have, I pulled these screenshots from the ads. This one on the left irks me the most. You might recognize this. This is that little solar facility in the Bozeman area here. If you're heading out of town to the west, north side of the highway, there's those little rows of solar panels. That's what this is from. It is a tiny solar facility by any standard. It was a pilot project for the utility. It's a couple hundred kilowatts. It's ludicrously small to try to portray it in this way, where you have this worker walking amongst the rows of panels, and it makes it seem like, oh, they've got so much solar, and they're doing solar. This is really quite absurd. It's small compared to anything else being done around the country, and the company is fighting solar in every venue that it can. So it's interesting that the company recognizes that there's publicity value to acting like they have solar and like solar, but they don't actually do solar. They've got an ad where they feature the Archie Bray Foundation. It's a artist facility up near Helena. The company has made donations to them over the years, and now the Archie Bray Foundation is featured in an ad where they talk about how much they like Northwestern. And they have other ads like this running. A lot of these ads end with the gentleman in the middle, the blue shirt, that's Bob Rowe, CEO, standing with a bunch of employees. I want to make this clear. The guy in the middle, the CEO, the executives, that's the problem that we're dealing with here. These are the for-profit people. Everybody else, the regular employees, that's not the problem. Those folks are great. The people who are out working on the lines and doing all the business of the utility, they are fantastic. That is not the problem. It's the executives that are trying to increase these profits and do raw deals for consumers. Talked about some of these examples of the utility being bad for climate, bad for ratepayers. What are we doing going forward? What's the next sort of big plan of the company? They want to build a bunch of expensive gas plants. That is the current plan of the company. Now, why is that a problem? When I say gas plants, they sometimes were called natural gas plants. I'm not sure why it's has to be called natural. I'm not sure what unnatural gas plants would be, but we're talking about fossil fuel gas plants here. Quick reminder, why is that bad for the climate? Gas plants, while they burn a little cleaner than coal plants, they still produce about half the carbon emissions of a coal plant. So it's certainly not zero. It certainly is still a substantial amount. When you just burn the gas for electricity, you get about half the carbon emission as a coal plant. And then as researchers and scientists have looked into the whole life cycle of gas plants, you look at the extraction of the gas from the ground, usually through the fracking process these days. Then they have to transport it via pipes to the plants, and there's leakages along the way. And the more we look, the more leaks we find, where it is straight methane being leaked into the atmosphere, which is a far more potent greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide. For the first 20 years that it's in the atmosphere, I think a molecule of methane is like 80 times more potent than CO2 in terms of greenhouse gas impact. So these gas plants are a problem for climate change. And 10 years ago, some folks called them gas plants a bridge fuel. We needed to be on gas for a little while we moved off coal until renewable energy prices came down. Well, we no longer need that bridge. The prices have come down. We can go straight to renewable energy. So the problem here is Northwestern only wants to build these new fossil fuel gas plants. Again, in their most recent complete 20-year plan, finalized 20-year plan, it had zero new renewables, only new gas plants. They put out a draft plan again earlier this year. I have read through the thing. It's not as direct in saying that they only want new gas plants, but if you kind of read between the lines, you know they only want new gas plants. Why does the company want this? Again, back to their motivation for all of their decisions. More expensive means more profit. Gas plants are more expensive than renewable energy options. In particular for Northwestern, gas plants will require new pipelines. The company has said this in the past. This is from their 2013 20-year plan. The company said the natural gas pipelines that serve Northwestern service territory are near full capacity, and that installation of significant new natural gas-fired generation anywhere in Northwestern service territory will likely require pipeline capacity upgrades, aka new pipelines, or interruptible pipeline service with a diesel fuel backup. So you have big tanks of diesel fuel sitting on site ready to burn that, which certainly isn't good for the climate either. The point here is they're going to need these new pipelines, and the company often tries to pretend like those costs don't exist. When they do the evaluation of what will it cost to do a new gas plant, they try to draw a fence around the plant itself and just look at the cost there, not looking at the pipelines that are going to need to be built to feed these new gas plants that they want to build. Perhaps, unsurprisingly, this language has disappeared from all of their long-term plans ever since. It only appeared in 2013, and when they also had a bunch of new gas plants in the future plan, and it's disappeared since. I want to talk briefly about what the process is for getting a new power plant approved, because this is one of the big fights that we're going to be facing down here over the next year. This is, again, for any utility. They always follow this sort of three-step process. First, you create one of these 20-year plans. you do some modeling, you look ahead and you see how much energy are we going to need to serve our customers, how much energy at different times of the year, and what is the load growth going to be, you know, how much do we need this year versus 10 years versus 20 years from now. Everybody creates these plans. We are currently in this stage of the process. The company has produced a draft plan. They put it out back in, it was like March or April. They took a bunch of public comment on it, and now they are finalizing the final plan, which can come out anytime between now and December of this year. But they'll put out this plan. Utilities in general love to manipulate this step of the process. There's all these little ways to sort of tweak the underlying calculations and the underlying modeling so that the outcome is what the utility wants it to be, which again, remember, is going to be expensive new power plants. And this isn't just Northwestern. Utilities around the country very commonly do this. After that, they will issue a request for proposals. Again, this is standard for utilities to do this. They will look at the 20-year plan and say, okay, here's what the 20-year plan says we need next. We're going to put out a request for proposals for developers to build a plant that meets those needs. Now, keep in mind, the utility has likely shaped the 20-year plan so that the need is what they want it to be, not necessarily what's best for customers. And they'll manipulate this process as well, the RFP process, to make sure that the final short list of developers who get selected and the final project that gets brought before the commission for approval is the one that they wanted all along. And this is just something that utilities around the country have done for years and years because they want to make money. They get a bunch of bids in from developers, they winnow it down to a short list, then they'll bring one to the Public Service Commission to get approved and put into customers' rates. And they, in large part, get approval by pointing back to steps one and two and saying, look, we did this 20-year plan. It said we had this certain need. We put out a request for proposals. We found a project that meet that need. Now approve that. So it all builds on itself. Mention the Public Service Commission there. I said we talk about them a little more. Let's talk about them a little more. What is this? It's a state regulatory body. It's a state government agency. It is headed by five elected commissioners. These are folks who run for office. They run on a partisan basis. They run as a Democrat or a Republican. They run on geographically shaped districts. So you can see in the map here, like District 1 is in the upper right. That's sort of how they run. It's not statewide, but it's by these specific districts. And for here, Bozeman, Roger Koopman, this gentleman here representing Gallatin County, as well as he's that whole yellow one, District 3 down the lower left there. They are all Republicans right now, all five of them. That's just how people have voted. This group of five people will approve or deny any new power plants that Northwestern brings forward. There are five of them. To get anything passed, to get it approved, you need a majority vote. So you need three. If you have three votes, you win. And you can get something passed. They do a lot more than just approve or deny new power plants. They have a lot more duties, including how much money is the company going to make? What is its profit margin going to be? How much are we all going to pay as customers? That's one of their biggest duties by far. But specifically, they are the gatekeepers on this go, no-go on new power plants. Whatever you think of the commissioners, if you know the commissioners, whatever you think of the commissioners, the commission has an excellent staff. They have a professional staff who are there. They don't come and go with the commissioners as they get elected. They're just there all the time. They have accountants, they have lawyers, they have engineers, and they're fantastic people who are just doing a good job at analyzing what is the utility saying, what are the other parties in these cases saying, and distilling that for commissioners. I think the commission staff is great. So the company is going to want to build these gas plants. The commission is going to be the gatekeeper on this. Just generally, sort of the process going forward, how can we get involved, how can we influence things? I think grassroots outreach is one of the best ways. First off, with the utility itself. So we are customers of this utility, and it is certainly legitimate and within our rights, if you will, quote unquote, to tell the utility what we want as customers, that we want clean energy, and we don't want fossil fuels. We can demand this of our utility. And our wants as customers are legitimate without needing to know every single detail about how it gets done. You don't have to be an engineer. You don't have to be a lawyer or an accountant to have your wants be legitimate as a customer and to express those to the company, to the utility. And then we are citizens. We can demand action of our representatives who have a say in a lot of this stuff. You've got the public service commissioners. You can contact them if you want to and express your wants. They have phone numbers, they have email addresses, you can call them, you can write them, and you can tell them what you want anytime. You've got the governor and legislators. They will be important, they are important. We don't have another legislative session until 2021. I do think that there's gonna be a process here that takes place where Northwestern tries to get approval for a gas plant sometime in the next year, probably before the next legislative session. So always be reaching out to the governor and legislators, but I do think this fight is gonna hit us before the next legislative session. Cities and counties, these are real important. These are customers of the utility as well, and they are your representatives to the company. If the city of Bozeman or Gallatin County were to express to Northwestern, we want clean energy, maybe we want 100% clean energy, that is a signal to the company about what its customers want, an important one. And it's a way where folks in other states around the country have pushed their utilities to move towards clean energy and not fossil fuels. And then finally, the Montana Consumer Council. A lot of folks haven't heard of this office. It's a state government agency as well. It is designed to represent all of us as the consuming public. And they represent us particularly at the Public Service Commission. They also have a professional staff and are involved in all of these cases about whether to build new power plants or not. They need to hear from everyday consumers. They don't hear a lot from everyday consumers about what they want. Bob Nelson is the head of the office. You can call him, you can write him and say, I am a consumer and this is what I want and I want you to represent me. That is entirely legitimate and they need to hear that. For the Montana Consumer Council, 406-444-2771. And an email address would be robnelson, N-E-L-S-O-N, at mt.gov. And then finally, just making a generic pitch about joining your local clean energy organization. There are many. They are fantastic. We'd love to have you as a member of MEIC, the Sierra Club, any other organization that's doing this great work. We will help keep you informed. We will make you confident about what's going on so that you can contact your elected officials, contact the utility, and be effective. Your support helps power truly low-cost, effective advocacy in these venues that we find ourselves in. Almost all of us sort of partner with these larger national legal firms or national organizations where we're really able to bring in hefty technical expertise at very low cost. And it's very effective. So again, why are we here today? Because today, Northwestern is not one of these utilities that are doing these great things around clean energy. But together, we can make it do them. So thank you.
Again, my name is David Merrill. I'm with the Sierra Club, working out in the Missoula field office. Just wanted to recognize Natalie Meyer, Sustainability Director for the City of Bozeman. We have two legislators here, Tom Woods and Denise Heyman, right?
Love to take questions.
Not really a question. I was just wondering if you could explain how there was the 9-12% increase that they put on top of things and sort of showed the logic as to why they want to make things more expensive.
KGVM is here up front, and they are recording this whole thing. You need to know that this is being recorded. Just wanted to let you know that. Community Radio. Mm-hmm. Joy LeClaire.
Yes.
I'm curious how the approval process works for both of them, but particularly for the procurement plan, since it's so, I actually did wander into it. It was a thicket and it was impossible to understand. I thought it was going to contain specific requests, and I think I heard you say that it doesn't. And how does the PSC okay something that is so murky as that?
So this plan, this 20-year plan, it's a multi-hundred page document. It has a lot of technical jargon in it. Yeah, to get through it is a gauntlet, really. The process at the commission, our commission does not approve or deny the plan itself. Some commissions in other states will actually approve or deny or some other terminology there, but a very clear-cut approval or denial. Ours doesn't do that. Our commission merely files its own comments about what it thinks about the plan. Now, these comments can be written in such an approving, gushing manner, if you will, or such a stern, negative manner that they can almost act as an approval or denial, but we don't have that exact sort of hard-cut approval, denial, they vote on that. How does the commission come up with its comments? First off, there's a public comment period where they want to hear from everyday consumers, and they want to hear from other experts who have reviewed the plan and found, here's some deficiencies, maybe you overestimated the cost of wind and solar, maybe you underestimated the cost of fossil fuels, as is a common strategy of utilities, and you file those comments with the commission, point it out to them. The commission staff, who again are fantastic experts, they'll go through and summarize all the comments that they receive, all the public comments, and they'll actually make recommendations to the commissioners about sort of what to do, generally what comments they think might be good. So you can participate in that process. When the final plan comes out, there'll be a public comment period, and we will certainly go through it and let our members know it, and I know Sierra Club will, I know others will as well, and then submit comments to the commission. The everyday consumer voice is extremely important in this process. For the commissioners to hear from, I am a regular Northwestern customer and here's what I want, that is extremely important because they don't hear from everyday customers quite that much. They usually hear from lawyers and others representing specific interest groups. But to hear everyday customers, and again, you do not have to be a technical person to do that. Just expressing that this is what I want is very valuable. So that'll be processed there when the plan comes out.
If I'm hearing you correctly, there isn't an up and down answer. There isn't yes, you're okay to go, or no, you're not. So does that leave Northwestern Energy, for instance, with the issue of gas-fired plants, does that leave them free? If it's Orphis, it leaves them free to decide, yes, we're going to invest the money.
Leaves the company free to move forward with that request for proposals process, maybe a little more without as much hesitancy. So unless the commission's comments are extremely negative and very blunt about don't go forward with a request for proposals for a gas plant, the company is going to do that. And even on the last plan was in 2015, and the commission's comments actually were quite strong against the company, saying they didn't think the plan was very well done, they thought they should start over. The company blew past that stop sign and put out an RFP for new gas plants anyway. And it wasn't until sort of another incident happened a few months later where the company then pulled back and canceled that RFP. But the plan itself won't be, in a legal sense or a regulatory sense, a hard yes or no to proceed. The company can do so anyway.
So often the arguments between fossil fuels and renewables is primarily a cost, environmental and climate change, and a jobs argument. And I just wanted to know, with their increased regulation, maybe is there some social justice or environmental performance, social performance, or any other arguments between the fossil fuel and renewable energy infrastructure or procurement rules of either of those plants? Because fossil fuels is kind of in the dark ages, and renewables really, there's other countries that they've moved forward in their gender empowerment, equality, local community development, enterprise developments, creating other markets, supply chains, etc. So I wanted to know, are we still sitting within costs and environments, or has it moved beyond that?
Right. So maybe in kind of the three groups here, we've got the company, we've got the utility, we've got the Public Service Commission, and then we've got sort of the public, if you will. All three of those absolutely can think about, consider, advocate for jobs, a cleaner environment, pursuing those goals. Now, the commission is much more restricted of any of those other parties because it has legal boundaries, sort of legal guidelines for how it makes decisions, which quite honestly are mostly cost-based. They are trying to find sort of a least cost way to provide electricity. But there's wiggle room in their mandates for considering other benefits to a wind facility or a solar facility. If you go to the utility, they can do whatever they want. The utility can be out there pounding the table for, we need more wind facilities in Montana because it'll create clean energy and it will create jobs, particularly in rural communities, which is where we find these large-scale facilities often located. They're in the rural counties. They're in Tool County. They're in Glacier County. They're in like the rural part of Cascade County. That's where these jobs end up getting created. The utility absolutely can be pounding the table for, this is what we want, and Public Service Commission, we think you should approve this on these grounds. They can make that argument. They don't. This utility does not. And quite honestly, through sort of the general how utilities operate around the country, historically they haven't done that. They've been much more about cost, cost, cost. And even today, it's still a lot about cost, cost, cost. The nice thing is renewables win on cost today. So not only do you get the lowest cost energy option, but you do get these other benefits as well. And then the third category there, the public, we all can advocate for whatever we want as well and try to tell our elected officials, which includes the commissioners, what we want and that we want them to pursue these outcomes of economic development and diversification and empowerment of communities. We can absolutely convey that to them. I'll leave it at that.
So the first slide, you showed three other utilities, and they also are investor-owned utilities.
Yep.
Is that correct? So they have a similar profit model. What has convinced them to pursue renewables?
A little bit of it is political. In Colorado, the state government there is moving toward 100% clean electricity. I think they just passed 100% carbon-free by 2045 was what Colorado just passed. There's just a minor differentiation there between clean energy and carbon-free. But I think a little bit of it was Xcel Energy seeing the political writing on the wall that this mandate was coming. And so they got ahead of it. They made their 100% carbon-free commitment before the state did, and they got out in front. And consequently, they got a bunch of good PR. And now you talk to folks in Colorado, and they say, yeah, our utility is going down the right path. Good for them. I wish we had that. At the end of the day, utilities still make money off of wind and solar as well. They don't make negative money. They make money. It's an infrastructure build. It does cost money to build wind and solar, and they can get that approved, put into their rates, and they can make money off of that as well. Now, they might not make as much money as fossil fuels, but they still make money off of that. So there's still a financial interest to doing those projects.
In the 20-year plan, is Northwest Energy investing in energy storage that would help the grid accommodate renewable energy?
No. Short answer, no. The company still thinks that lithium-ion batteries are too expensive. And there's an opportunity for what's called a pumped hydro energy storage project here in Montana. It's a way of doing a big battery via moving water from two elevations where you sort of send it down a pipe that has a generator in it. It generates electricity when you need it. Then you pump it back up to the top when you don't need it. And it's just this closed loop of sending water up and down. And you generate electricity, you store electricity. And Montana has an opportunity to do that. I have not seen the company show any interest in that project. And it's really unfortunate because it is energy storage is the key to getting to these really high percentages and ultimately 100% clean energy. But not much movement by the company on that front.
My name is Heather Bellamy. I work for Northwestern Energy. And I would like to just add a little texture to the conversation. First of all, Northwestern Energy does want to be 100% renewable. Absolutely. We are too good not to be. Number two, the three utilities that you splashed up on the screen, the Indiana utility is 65% coal right now. They would kill for our existing portfolio, which by nameplate capacity is 70% clean energy right now. The storage issue is a really big deal because in the state of Montana, when the wind is not blowing, the sun is not shining, and it's 30 degrees below zero, you need that 24/7 workhorse power to keep the lights on and to keep people warm because we live in a state where losing power could actually be a life or death situation. Now, the battery storage thing, we just invested in a company called Kilowatt Labs. They're making supercapacitor batteries. The company's out of New York. The batteries are being made in Dubai. Supercapacitor technology has been around for a long time, but this latest iteration is being used all over Europe and it hasn't been brought to North America yet. And we just invested in this company and are putting together some projects to test out this battery storage. And as we all in this room know, battery storage is the holy grail for renewables because if you can store that energy, then you can get to 100% renewable. So we have a couple things that we keep our eye on. Number one, we are mandated to provide safe and reliable power to our customers. And number two, we have to keep that affordable. Right now, we're the 11th cheapest rate utility in the country. So you're making it sound like we're so expensive. And I also have to just, this is a personal issue for me, but I really take affront to you putting that photograph of Bob Rowe up on the screen and saying that he's the problem, because people in this room know him, and they know him to be a really fine individual. He's a liberal Democrat who really cares deeply about the environment. So let's not vilify someone who's doing the best that they can to navigate this incredibly difficult situation that we find ourselves in during this regulatory process.
Thank you for coming. I can follow up with you, perhaps. I heard something interesting at the front end of that, that Northwestern wants to commit to 100%.
And, you know, it's very easy to say, oh, you know, we're going to be 100% renewable by, I don't know, pick a date, 2045. How do you pick that date? Like, a lot of these people are saying, well, this is what our goal is. Goals aren't really hard to come up with, right? I mean, you can say whatever you want. Whether they can get there or not, that's a really hard thing. What we're working at right now is putting together a plan that gets us there without falling off a cliff.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
I truly believe that if there's any state in the union that can work together to get there, it's Montana. I'm exhausted by this that's happening, the pushing and the pulling. Call us. Talk to us. Let's work together.
I appreciate that greatly. Thank you for that. We want to work together. We want to work together to get to... And I agree. Nobody likes fighting. And nobody likes acrimony and tension. We want to work together, so I appreciate that greatly, and we do look forward to working with you. I mean no particular offense to Bob Rowe by using that image. It's just that that's at the end of the commercials. He's the most prominent, and he's an example of the executive class of the company, which I do believe is different than the rest of the company, who are fine folks. That was why that was. Representative Tom Woods.
I'm a four-term legislator, and in that time I brought over 10 bills to try to make the regulatory process more fair to consumers. And your company opposed those bills every single time. And so your company is part of the problem. Having burden of proof in a rate case, that's fair. Allowing the PSC to call a rate case, that's fair. Repealing the outage tracker, which was put in place when your company was only here to operate grids, that was fair, and you fought me every step of the way. So I want your company to move forward with a different model. We have a problem, and I think it's the return on equity. Your company gets paid 11.5% based on what they own, and that's the reason why your company is opposed to other people having generating facilities. So we need to change that, because it isn't working. It's not working for us. And if you want to say that your company is willing to work, I need to see you walk in the walk. Your
Tom,
company.
I need you to come to the table when you're invited.
I've been at the table, and your lobbyists have been abrasive, insulting, and I'm willing to work with you guys.
Why don't you call me?
I will.
Let's talk.
I'm just wondering, all the things she was talking about, is that in the 20-year plan?
Yeah.
You're talking about this 20-year plan. Is that in it?
A commitment to 100% clean electricity? No.
I'm probably the first person at Northwestern Energy that said that out loud.
No. Can we quote you?
We will get there. We want to get there.
In a time that 20
years
will save us?
Other states that have made these 100% clean energy goals for their entire states. You have Colorado, New Mexico, the state of California, Washington State, Hawaii, I think New York just did it. Yeah, New York and California, two of the largest economies in the world. They have set these goals. Now, they have set them out to 2045, or maybe one of them was 2050. So they're recognizing that it will take some time. That's 25 years from now. That is a long lead time, but they have set that goal and they're working toward it. And I think that is an important distinction here. No one is out here saying we need 100% clean electricity tomorrow. We recognize that it's gonna take some time, that technology is evolving, costs are coming down. Those are all good things. And those other states have recognized that too. So yes, it will be a technical challenge to get to 100%, but that's why these companies have given
you two countries, Northwestern. Paraguay, Albania, the Congo, Iceland, they are all 100% clean electricity today. Okay? Next year, Scotland is going to produce the gross annual electricity consumption 100% from renewables. It's 5 million people. They're wealthy, industrialized, just like Montana. They have five times the people, and they're going to get 100% next year. This is something that's already happened. It's going on. What's the holdup?
They're doing it together. That's a whole country deciding that they're going to go in this certain direction, and so everybody's behind that.
Well, we're behind the world.
We are behind it.
You know, in this room we are. I think you know what it is that I'm saying here. There's a lot of discord. It's not 100% of all of us marching in the same direction. It's a lot of difficulty.
An interesting example from the region, Idaho Power, from Idaho, of all places, committed to 100% clean energy. And the date is escaping me. It was probably 2045, but they did that. And that was
2045 in Green Mountain Power in Vermont, 100% clean electricity by 2030.
They did it without a state mandate, without a law. The company voluntarily committed to that. And folks are rallying behind Idaho Power over there. We would love to rally behind Northwestern. Set that goal. We will get behind you. We will help you make it happen. We look forward to that. I had this right at the front end, and I truly believe this. Utilities can be the hero. They can be the hero in the climate change conversation. The door is open, and we would love to be there and cheer them along in doing it. And we need our local utility. We need Northwestern to do that. They have not been doing that so far, but we look forward to working with them.
Heather Bellamy, that's B-E-L-L-A-M-Y, 570-2092.
I'd like to alert people that there's a very innovative project in Martinsdale called the Gordon View Pump Storage Facility. Northwestern Energy is stonewalling that facility. They want to sell this energy, which is carbon-free, to Northwestern Energy, and it's not happening. If you'd like to learn about that project, go onto the website for Absaroka Energy, and we need to really advocate for that project because it will obviate the need for gas-fired plants. So we have a solution that's not gas-fired plants right here in Montana, and Northwestern Energy is refusing to negotiate. So check out Absaroka Energy.
Okay, just a quick comment about the Idaho Power as an example.
Yeah.
That came together because the community came together and supported the utility in the study and the research to make that plan. It happens that one of the key people in drafting that plan is the local person on Northwestern's board of directors. So we have capacity in this state, and we have some powerful partnerships in place, and we've been working really positively with Northwestern Energy here in Bozeman. I just think collaboration is much more powerful than confrontation.
Yeah. I'm a rooftop guy, so I produce more energy than I consume. And so it seems, in doing some other bits and pieces of research, that what we have to do is change the incentivization of how Northwest Energy makes its money, right? Because right now, the only way they can increase their profit margin is to increase their expenses, as you've pointed out very clearly. So why then can't we turn that on its head like a few of the other states have done and incentivize instead less energy consumption and more buying up the energy that's being produced by small rooftop installations like mine and places like we're talking about in Martinsdale, and just kind of turn the whole thing around and pay them for using less energy and buying the energy that's being produced by others.
Right.
Just doesn't seem like it's that huge of a...
The short answer is we can. If we were to enact the laws at the state legislature and at the Public Service Commission, we could switch to a model where the utility is incentivized for good outcomes for customers and for achieving efficiency goals. Sometimes that's called decoupling or performance-based rate making.
The Public Service Commission would be totally on board, right? Because that would be their mandate is to...
That's right. Yes.
Right? So then you've got the public and you've got the Public Service Commission on board with both of those things.
And yes, Northwestern has pursued that in the past. We came very close back in like 2009 to getting that.
We've tried that several times.
It's always, in general, it's usually about precisely how much money is the utility going to make given that specific regulatory model. There's a lot of back and forth. Obviously, the utility wants it higher. Some folks want it lower. Usually, that negotiation has been the thing that's fallen apart. But there's other reasons. People don't like change. It's new. It's different.
You have just heard an informational talk titled, What's the Deal with Northwestern Energy?, given by Brian Fady, the Clean Energy Program Director of the Montana Environmental Information Center, recorded at the Bozeman Public Library on August 8, 2019. This has been a Beyond the Deep End production, produced by Joy LaClaire for KGVM. You can support your community radio by going to kgvm.org and click on the gold support button at the top of the page.